to an ice age? It looked like nothing. I had to trust Skippy and Bilby and people on Earth like my old friend Dr. Friedlander. We knew the good doctor had worked on the UN team investigating the Jupiter incident because after we sent a recognition signal, UNEF Command broadcast an appeal for us to examine the data and verify the grim conclusions in the report. There was a short note from Friedlander in the mission, basically hoping that he was wrong about the cloud. He was wrong. That was not good news. Skippy's analysis determined the situation was even worse than what the UN feared. There was one thing we could offer the people of Earth. Hope. Our sensors did not detect any Maxalt ships in system, nor any other ships. Still, they were likely monitoring events with stealth ships or satellites. Smythe made a good point that I hadn't considered. He doubted the Kiddies left any warships near Earth. Having taken their best shot already, the Maxalts would not want to risk an unplanned space battle that could provoke us further. One thing was clear. The Rotten Kiddies wanted to conduct their harassment campaign on their terms, make us react to them. One overly aggressive starship captain seeking glory could screw up their carefully made plans, and that did not happen in the Maxalts' military. Their entire society was very top-down. Those in power issued commands, and everyone below did what they were told. So we had that working for us. Whoopee freaking do. Our timing sucks. Skippy's chain of wormholes, creating a fast route from Earth to the Super Duty wormhole that connected out to the Sculptor Dwarf, was finally stable and fully ready for regular use. By the way, no, there is not a franchise opportunity available for Skippy's chain of wormholes. Maybe he's still looking to expand his business of unique chapstick flavors, you'll have to ask him. And if you decide to get into business with Skippy, don't say I didn't warn you. Anyway, the chain of wormholes was finally ready for ships to make the quick trip out to the Sculptor Dwarf Galaxy, and damn it, we couldn't use it. We could not risk parking big, vulnerable transport ships in Earth orbit to load with colonists for Avalon. Probably the environmental conditions on Avalon weren't ready to support large numbers of colonists anyway, but that didn't matter. We also could not bring transport ships full of people to Jaguar, not with the threat of hostile warships lurking in our home star system. The Navy could have tried to protect a group of transports while they were slowly loaded in low Earth orbit, but UNEF Command agreed with Zhao that was not the best use of his ships. Not yet. Maybe the situation would change once snow began falling in July over the Northern Hemisphere. Until then, we were sticking to the plan. Something that was not planned, at least not by me, came in a message from UNEF Command. They promoted me to Brigadier General. I know. It surprised the hell out of me, too. Technically, because I'm on detached service to the armed forces of Skippistan, UNEF Command just authorized Skippy to promote me, but the effect was the same. What mattered was that UNEF gave me a vote of confidence after I failed to prevent murderous aliens from launching a cloud that would freeze our homeworld. After I failed to disperse the cloud, or to even try keeping it away from Earth. They promoted me, while I still had no concrete plan to save the world again. So why, after years of second-guessing my every action and bitching and moaning about unavoidable risks I took, why was I suddenly ordered to pin a star on my uniform? It's simple. Because Zhao asked them to. In the stack of messages we brought from FOB Jaguar, one was from Admiral Zhao to UNEF Command. He stated that in his opinion, I needed more authority to better enable me to force the Rotten Kiddies to clean up the mess they made. Also, so I could deal with the admirals under his command on a more equal basis. Despite what I expected, the message announcing my immediate promotion did not contain a hint of skepticism or resentment. It was a form, based on U.S. Army standard for simplicity, very matter-of-fact, without any note of congratulations. That kind of felt like a slap in the face. I tried not to take it personally. The UN was worried about the planet freezing and nuclear-armed nations going to war over dwindling resources. I sure as hell was not going to whine about my freaking feelings. Besides, there was a personal note. Not from UNEF Command, but from Chang. It was brief. Joe, it's not about you. Congratulations. Kick some ass out there for me. Kong. I knew what he meant. Don't argue about the promotion. Don't be consumed with self-doubt about whether I deserve it. Just pin on the star and use my new rank as an asset to do my job. You know what? Chang didn't have to worry. I did not feel awkward about the promotion to general officer. My reaction was more like It's about damn time. I had grown up a lot while serving with the Merry Band of Pirates. Even before we acquired Elder Weapons, I had gotten over the worst of my self-doubts and grown comfortable with my authority. So comfortable that I had determined I was not taking any shit from dirtside politicians who wanted me to praise them for their inspiring leadership, during which they did abso-freaking-lutely nothing useful. Also, I wasn't taking any shit from senior military officers who had never been off-world and never commanded anything more deadly than an LMD, large mahogany desk. So when Sims pinned stars on my uniform in a brief ceremony that morning, I stood up straight, returned salutes with pride, and went back to my office to get on with my job. After verifying the situation at Earth had not changed significantly and showing the flag in our home star system, we went outbound through the backstop wormhole. We had work to do. Coming back to my office after the quick promotion ceremony, I was surprised to see a sort of cone-shaped package on my desk. Whatever it was wrapped in red tissue paper with a card. Skippy, what is this? You're supposed to read the card, dum-dum, he said with an implied duh. Oh, sorry. The card was very elaborate, all gold braid and filigree. It read, "Sincere congratulations on your promotion." The card was from Skippy. Wow, thanks. That is very... Yeah, he said impatiently. Open the package, will you? Tearing open the tissue paper, I saw... Really, I'm not sure what I saw. There was a banana. The rest of the flower arrangement, if that's what it was, consisted of pine tree branches and scraggly-looking flowers and some type of shrubbery. Also something that looked like milkweed. None of it appeared to be plants that were native to the planet we originally called Club Skippy. Some of the shrubs might have been blueberry bushes. They had berries on the branches. Warily, I pulled off a berry and tasted it. A blueberry for sure. Probably from the hydroponics garden on the Flying Dutchman, although we had planted crops on Jaguar, stuff brought from Earth. These flowers are very nice, Skippy. It looks great on...
It's an edible arrangement, numbskull. Didn't you see the banana?
Yeah. Edible, huh?
Yes. You can eat everything in there, according to the U.S. Army Survival Manual. Everything is edible if you try hard enough.
It's not always about you, Joe. Don't be so selfish.
I worked hard on this, he pouted.
Sorry, this is... I contemplated how to eat a pine tree. A very thoughtful gift. As I said what I intended to be meaningless happy talk, I realized it was true. It was a thoughtful gift for an army promotion. Certainly no one would give that arrangement to a civilian.
Do you really like it, or are you just being nice?
I genuinely like it, buddy. Jeez, anyone can throw together a fruit basket, right? This is special and very appropriate. Do you mind if I put it in the galley? He looked crestfallen. You don't want it in your office? No one will see it in my office, I explained.
Oh, he instantly brightened.
Good idea. That day at lunchtime, I put the arrangement on display in Valkyrie's galley, emphasizing that it was edible, according to Skippy. Yes, there were a bunch of special ops people in the galley at the time, but that was purely a coincidence. Did I think our high-speed operators would take it as a challenge to eat the arrangement? Gosh, that never occurred to me. It did surprise me when someone tried to eat the basket.
Sir? Sims knocked on my doorframe that afternoon.
Come in, Exo. I waved to her. She sat down on the edge of the chair the way people do when they don't intend to stay long. To set her at ease, I closed my laptop, leaned back in my chair, and pulled a dish of chocolates out of a drawer, sliding it across the desk to her.
Mmm. She popped a chocolate in her mouth. Thank you. The crew wants to host a promotion dinner for you this evening.
I nodded, and she continued.
Do you have anything in mind?
Anything but baked ziti. She raised both eyebrows at me, so I explained. I'm from New England. At any sort of awards banquet for school or whatever, you get baked ziti. It's cheap, and you can make big pans of it to feed a lot of people.
If you're lucky, there will be a tray of meatballs to go with it. But if you're at the back of the line, the meatballs are all gone by the time you get there. You get dry ziti that is stuck to the bottom of the pan, and you try to scrape enough sauce out of the meatball pan to make it edible. Not a fan of baked ziti, she muttered as she tapped on her tablet. Well, I don't dislike it. Just had to eat too much of it. What do we have for a vegetarian option? Sir? She blinked at me. Like, what sort of how about steaks, I suggested. Steak is not a vegetarian. Cows eat plants, right? Like I've said before, beef is just veggies in concentrated form. It's a superfood if you think about it. She sighed. I will try not to think about it. All right, we do have enough fillets and ribeyes for everyone who wants it. I'll arrange for a chicken option and a real vegan meal. That would be great. Hey, you can include a kale salad on the menu. Will you eat a kale salad? Let's not go crazy. In the end, we negotiated that I would eat a small kale salad, and she would provide spice cake cupcakes for dessert with decadent buttercream frosting. I should get promoted more often. Newly promoted Lieutenant Kinsta pinged Captain Scarandum's office before touching the button to make the door slide open. Sir, there is an Admiral Vriss from Homefleet coming to talk with you.
No.
Scarandum's antennas swung side to side. No?
I know Admiral Vriss. He is with the Homefleet's Incident Investigation Division. He is here to talk at me.
Ah, Kinsta. The ECO captain leaned forward, tidying up his small desk and looking down at his disheveled uniform. I have already explained to the fleet twice, and to an Inquisitor, that I have no idea how the Maxalts learned the location of the batch of ships we lost. How many times can they ask the same question? Kinsta didn't speak, but he knew the answer. The fleet would ask the same question until they got the answer they wanted to hear. Is there anything you require of me, sir?
Yes. If you hear me attempting to strangle Vriss, he tilted his head.
Of course. I will do my best to stop you.
No, you idiot. If I'm trying to strangle him, I want you to hit him on the head, then help me get rid of the body.
He stared at his aide.
Are you sure you belong in the ethics office?
I ask myself that question every day, Kinsta admitted, and bowed as he backed away.
Admiral Vriss got straight to the point.
Captain Ottavio Scarandum. I am here to officially reprimand you for insulting our exalted patrons. Consider yourself hereby reprimanded.
I feel just terrible about it, sir.
Scarandum hung his head, figuring that was the best way to get it over with.
Unofficially, I am here for two reasons. First, to give you the thanks of fleet leadership. Those damned arrogant Rindaloo have been looking down on us for too long. You put them in their place, and you were correct. Our patrons did fail to properly protect us. Our government is sending an official note of complaint.
Scarandum blinked. Wow, I don't make a habit of it, you understand?
I do. There is another reason for your visit?
Yes. The Admiral eased his considerable bulk back on the couch.
I heard a rumor that ECO acquired a selection of truly fine vintage spirits.
Don't believe every rumor you hear, sir.
Vriss's antennas drooped.
Then you do not have?
Scarandum opened a drawer and pulled out a bottle.
It is for you to determine if these spirits are truly fine.
If you insist.
I am, after all, with the Investigations Division?
Later, when a third of the bottle was gone, most of it having disappeared inside the Admiral, Scarandum pushed away his own glass.
That's enough for me. I'm supposed to get this ship ready to fly again by tomorrow morning.
The Will-Do Sketchy Things was overdue for a heavy overhaul, but with humans having upset the balance of power in the galaxy, the Ethics and Compliance Office wanted every unit available for rapid deployment. His next shore leave might be a long time in the future.
Vriss waved an antenna in a dismissive gesture. You have a crew to handle the details. But, he looked at his own glass and downed the bit of liquid that lined the bottom. Perhaps I had enough. Captain, what will happen next? Are you interested in placing a wager? Sadly, no. This is official business. Home Fleet is interested in preventing the next disaster. Sir, all I can say is the entire galaxy is waiting to see how the humans will respond to the attack on their homeworld. Yes. Your guess, Captain? What will the humans do next? I don't know, sir. Will they use their new ships in a futile attempt to disperse the cloud on their own? Will they use their warships to protect transports while they evacuate a pitiful few thousand humans from their doomed home world? Will they... The Admiral burped and continued, talking to himself. Try to cut a deal with the Rindaloo or the Maxulks. Sir, Scarandum spoke before the senior officer could go off on a long tangent of useless speculation. What is the assessment of the Intelligence Bureau? Ha! Have those idiots ever been right about enemy intentions? Humans are our enemy now? Officially, they are not our allies, so... Vriss allowed his voice to trail off. The best assessment is that the humans probably haven't decided what to do. It could take them years to upgrade the ships we gave them, if it is possible at all. Neither of the senior species will stand by while the humans cut a deal with the other faction. Admiral, I do not see this ending well for the humans. I also do not see such a young, reckless species being idle while they tinker with the ships we gave them. Guess, then. What will they do? I don't think I can guess. There is only one thing I am certain of. What is that? Whatever the humans will do next, it is something we probably can't imagine.
Hey, Joe. Skippy's avatar appeared on my sink while I was shaving the next morning. First, congratulations on your first full day as a general officer.
Thanks, Skippy. You saying that means a lot.
It does.
You saying it without your usual snarkasm means a lot.
Snarkasm? That's funny.
What's up?
I mumbled. It's hard to speak properly when you're stretching your face to shave under your nose. I finished reviewing all the updates from my submind on Earth. It hates me, by the way. Don't all your subminds eventually hate you? Yeah, but this one really hates me now. I sort of dumped a huge pile of shit on its head, you know? Conditions on Earth are deteriorating, even faster than expected. It is acting as my unofficial representative, plus it is doing whatever it can to keep the situation down there from spiraling out of control. It was never designed to do that. I know. We appreciate it. Are you here to deliver bad news? These days, is there any other kind of news? Damn it. No. Well, actually, I do have some good news. All the bad stuff will be in your morning report. This is more personal, Joe.
Personal?
That got my hopes up. Along with official messages to UNEF Command, the UNEF member governments, and anyone else who would sulk if they got left out, we transmitted messages from the crew and from people at FOB Jaguar. All the messages had been censored by Skippy to avoid revealing classified information. That sucked, but it had to be done. We had to assume that even with Skippy's submind mostly in control of communications on Earth, the Maxulks were listening. Whatever we told UNEF Command or anyone else dirtside, the kiddies would hear about sooner or later. Probably sooner. My own messages had been directed to my parents, my sister, Jesse and Shauna, Dave, and friends from my hometown. Basically, all I said was, hang in there, the cavalry is coming. That was bland enough so the rotten kiddies couldn't get any useful information out of it. Did my parents send a reply? Yes, but that is queued up in your personal messages. You can read it any time. Don't be disappointed. They weren't able to say much, you understand? I do. So? I splashed water on my face. What else is personal?
Good news about our country, Mr. President.
Oh, yeah. Geez, Joe, that's a great way to sell it. Thanks a lot.
He looked hurt. Sorry. What is this news that all citizens of the glorious People's Republic should rejoice about?
The Ritz-Carlton Skippy Stand is almost complete. It surprised me that construction continued after the cloud thing, but here it is.
The mirror above the sink displayed an image. The sagging barn in the background I recognized from photos of Skippistan.
This is your luxury hotel?
What's wrong with it? He demanded, hands on his little hips. It looks like a pile of rocks with a corrugated sheet metal roof. Is that a goat looking out the window?
That is a top-quality fiberglass roof, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Seriously, that is a Ritz-Carlton? I can't believe that
it's a Ritz-Carlson, numbskull. I had to change the name because of, you know, the stupid lawsuit.
Right. Okay, well, the citizens of Skippistan can certainly rejoice, that's for sure. Man, I tried to give you some good news, and I'm truly sorry.
He folded his arms and looked away.
I guess it is good news that construction of that hotel boosted the local economy, right? Kept a couple goat herders busy for a weekend.
I certainly hope so. The hotel's construction budget was $6 billion.
Six, I choked.
Billion, like with a B?
Yes, why? The stones that thing is made from. Are they rough diamonds, something like that?
No, he laughed. It's mostly granite, I think.
Why the hell did you spend six?
Ha ha! As if I didn't spend a dime, dum-dum. Generous international investors paid for the hotel. My only involvement was design, of course. Plus, I do happen to own the company that was awarded the juicy construction contract.
Oh, you understand now? The hotel is a way of funneling cash into your pockets?
Exactly!
When did you decide to build a hotel?
Originally, the project was going to be a monorail.
Why does your goat farm need a freaking monorail?
It doesn't. Duh. I got the idea from The Simpsons.
Okay, so if you don't need a monorail, why...
Ugh. You are so dense, I'm surprised you haven't imploded and become a neutron star. Listen, dum-dum. I won't know that Skippistan doesn't need a cool monorail until the engineering, feasibility, and market demand studies are completed. Those studies will take years and cost several $100 million.
Who is doing this study?
Why, me, of course.
He didn't bother adding a spoken duh.
Ah, gotcha.
So these studies are just another way to stuff your pockets full of cash?
Yep.
He looked extremely proud of himself.
The bribes thing, thank you for that, by the way. The bribes had kind of been tapped out, so I needed a new channel for, business opportunities.
Boy, the end of the world has been fantastic for business.
What? Oh, yeah. Everyone on Earth is looking to secure my influence to survive the upcoming catastrophe.
See what I did there? The kitties created the cloud, so it's a cat-astrophe, man. Sometimes I amaze my...
Oh, my... You are profiting from the crisis?
Yes, I mean, no.
Whatever won't get me in trouble.
I'm serious, damn it. The world is ending. And instead of helping people, you're grabbing all the money you can for yourself?
It's not for me. I'm collecting money for charity, Joe. Really, I'm kind of like Gandhi when you think about it.
Gandhi?
Maybe that was a bad comparison. Hey! I'm like Robin Hood. Yeah, that's it. I get money from the rich and give it to the less fortunate.
All the money goes to charity?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay then. That's minus a small finder's fee, of course.
How small?
I glared at him.
25, he blinked.
20, he stuttered.
5%?
Damn, he muttered to himself.
That rate, I don't know why I even bother to...
The rest of the money actually goes to charity?
Yes,
he sniffed, acting insulted. Your planet is in crisis, so I give to only the most worthy charities, of course.
Could I get a list of these worthy charities, please? You don't need to bother yourself with those details, General Bishop. Your time is far too valuable now to...
I just spent 5 minutes arguing with a beer can about a luxury hotel that looks like a chicken coop.
Hey, my design inspiration was...
Okay, it was inspired by a chicken coop, but a list, right now, of these charities. I assume they are all registered somewhere?
Well, I decided it would be more efficient to bypass the middleman, you know, and give directly to needy individuals.
Fine. Give me a list of those names.
The list is far too long to...
How did you select the needy people?
Well, this is a funny story.
Ah, crap. Instantly I knew his scheme. You're giving money to the followers of Skippy as your money?
If I say yes, will you get mad at me?
You think?
Damn it. Listen, knucklehead. I am not freaking Santa Claus. I don't spy on people all year to make a naughty and nice list. The only reliable way for me to know who deserves my charity is to give it to people who I know truly have goodness in their hearts.
Goodness? Because they scammed other people into joining your pyramid scheme?
Hey, that is a slanderous accusation.
I thought you wound down your cult.
Club, Joe. It was a club.
Technically, it was a multi-level marketing. You know damned well what I mean. You were supposed to end your fake religion.
I tried. I really did. But now, with the cloud threatening your homeworld, people are seeking hope and solace.
I stopped to take a breath. Okay, I can understand that. As long as you didn't do anything to encourage,
I had nothing to do with it, I swear. The movement grew organically.
Okay, then. Like all organic things, he went on, because he just does not know when to shut up. Its growth might have benefited from nourishment. You know, fertilizer.
Fertilizer?
Like what?
The social media accounts, the websites. Oh, and the worldwide simulcast TV show broadcast in over 100 different languages.
You little shithead. You instigated the whole thing.
I facilitated, Joe. Totally different. All I did was help people. Can't you see that?
I am never... letting you go back to Earth again, I declared, while bonking my head on the bathroom mirror.
Hey, I didn't want to get dragged to your miserable mud ball of a homeworld in the first place, but now I have responsibilities.
You have scams.
Potato, potato.
He stuck his tongue out at me like a 2-year-old. Being a general officer means you have to choose which battles to fight. Knowing that Skippy would be happy to argue until the sun was a cold, dark lump of carbon, I let it go. In case you think I was being a coward, I did take firm, decisive action. I wrote a note to myself. Do not trust Skippy. That should take care of the problem.
Joe?
Skippy's avatar appeared on my office desk. He had his head cocked, looking at me intently.
You seem different.
How?
You are more angry.
Well, here's a newsflash for you. I've been pissed off since Columbus Day.
Yes, but now you are pissed off all the time. This is like a new Angry Joe.
Angry Joe, huh? You could be right about that. Wouldn't you be angry if aliens were threatening your homeworld?
Sure, but that is nothing new. We have been trying to keep aliens away from Earth ever since you and I met. What changed?
I had to think about that. He was right, I realized. I guess, before, I was mostly scared all the time. Frightened that I would fail, that my screw-ups would doom my people to extinction. Disaster was always hanging over my head, you know? Now, bad shit has already happened. I can't stop it from happening. All I can do is make the assholes pay big time. So, yeah, I'm angry. Think of it as, Joe 2.0, something like that.
Hmph!
He sniffed. In that case, I'll wait for Joe 2.3 to be released. That version will have the major bugs worked out, but it's before the feature bloat that slows everything down. That made me laugh. I think this version of Joe has all the features I'm going to have. It's not like I'm going to learn to play the piano or something like that.
Good point. You probably peaked a long time ago, to be honest.
Why are you such an asshole?
Sorry, he mumbled.
Is your upgrade to Angry Joe a good thing?
What do you mean?
When you were frightened, Joe, you thought all the time about how your actions might affect other people. You were concerned about others, that you couldn't let your emotions get in the way of making good decisions.
Angry Joe
is more likely to be motivated by your own emotions. That could be dangerous.
Shit. I hadn't considered that.
You should.
You're damned right about that. Crap. That was something I needed to think long and hard about. When I proposed to strike the enemy, was I doing it because the action would help humanity or to soothe my anger? A commander needed to keep a cool head. There were times when I tried to goad the enemy into doing something stupid, hoping their fear and anger would push them into making a mistake. Thanks, Skippy. If you see me letting my anger make me lose control, let me know right away. Will do. But I am not the best judge of squishy stuff like monkey motivations.
Yeah. 5 minutes later, Sims was in my office.
Sir?
Sit down, Exo. I need to talk to you about squishy monkey stuff.
Squishy?
She checked the floor before she stepped in something. Tapping my head, I explained. Monkey thinking processes. Squishy is how Skippy describes it.
Ah.
She sat down.
What about it?
He thinks the Jupiter cloud has changed me from Frightened Joe into Angry Joe. She nodded.
That's a good way to describe it.
I blinked. You noticed too?
Everyone has. Everyone who has served with you for a while. You don't like that?
It would be nice to have a few secrets.
It is dangerous for the commander to keep secrets, sir.
She repeated a long-time complaint about my leadership style. I shrugged. There wasn't anything to be said about that. After we found the Elder weapons at Maris, Sims had been hurt and angry that I hadn't told her about my hope of finding something the Elders had hidden there. That prompted me to promise I wouldn't keep anything important a secret from her. So far, I had kept that promise. Skippy is worried my anger will make me do something stupid. I'm concerned about that also.
You want me to warn you when I think you're doing something rash?
Yeah.
Haven't I been doing that all along?
Yes. Even when I don't appreciate it. Look, Sims, all I'm saying is I'm more likely now to do something rash out of anger than from fear.
Good.
Good. That was unexpected.
How is... You doubt yourself too much. Before we jumped into the ambush at Snowcone, you had a feeling something wasn't right about the change in rendezvous point?
Yes, I admitted. That was something I'd confessed to Sims one morning at breakfast while Valkyrie was deep inside the toxic atmosphere of that ice giant planet with thousands of ships looming over our heads.
You should have trusted your instincts. Trusted yourself. You are the best person to know if you're acting out of anger, sir. We're all angry about what's happening. Use that. Just be smart about it.
Chapter 5. U.S. Air Force Major Samantha Fireball Reed found a priority message waiting for her when she stepped out of the Dragonfly dropship, patting the hull affectionately with a gloved hand. The flight had been her first test of the upgraded spacecraft, the smaller of two models of dropships acquired from the Jurapta. The larger Scarab dropship, which could hold 30 beetles, or modified to carry 50 humans, would be more useful to the Legion. The Scarab was designed mostly as an assault lander to drop troops from orbit, and it was a big, clumsy beast to fly. The Dragonfly was more like the Theranan Falcons she was used to, max capacity of 14 passengers if everyone was very friendly, and it could also be configured as a gunship. The transition from flying the Falcon to qualifying on the Dragonfly was shorter than expected because the Theranan had partly stolen the design from the Beetles, and because Skippy had designed the flight control software so both craft would handle similarly. She had a new rank, new responsibilities, and a new uniform because the Air Force had recently changed to a dark blue. She still had her unfortunate call sign. All attempts to shake that had been in vain. Before reading the priority message, she inspected the spacecraft, making sure it was properly secured after flight. Only when the maintenance crew hinted that she was in their way did she walk over to the assault transport's airlock, holding her helmet under one arm. In the airlock, she opened the message and turned around. Admiral Zhao wanted her aboard his flagship, the Battleship Pacific, as soon as possible. He didn't say why, but then he was an admiral and she was a major, and he didn't need to give an explanation.
Staff Sergeant, she called to the crew chief who was in charge of the dropship. I need to borrow your bird again. Despite the rush, she waited 40 minutes outside Zhao's office. The outer office was a rather unimpressive space that appeared to have been a storage compartment of some sort. She knew that Pacific, despite the grandiose title of flagship, was still an obsolete, barely functional second-hand hulk running on reserve power. The battleship would someday hopefully be a mighty scourge to the enemies of humanity, but it had yet to go through refit, or even be scheduled for conversion as far as she knew. She did know the ship's previous name translated as "That's a bad beat for you," which was a term used in gambling or card games. She hadn't bothered to research it. The big battle wagon's nickname was, and probably always would be, Bad Beat, whether the Admiral liked it or not. Admiral Zhao will see you now, a somewhat apologetic yet still haughty staff officer called to her. Mind, the staffer pointed upward, cautioning Reed to watch out for the tangle of wires and conduits that hung down from an open access panel in the ceiling. No, Sammy reminded herself, the overhead. The UN fleet was being set up and run as a blue water navy, whether that made sense or not. She needed to get with the program and use naval terminology. Aboard the Flying Dutchman, and then Valkyrie, Bishop had been relaxed about standardizing terms between services or nationalities, caring only about terms that affected combat communication. The colonel often referred to walls instead of bulkheads, and floor rather than deck. Bishop wasn't in command of her home ship, the assault transport Caspian Sea, she reminded herself. Major Reed, reporting as or—
Relax, Major.
Zhao barely looked up from his tablet, then stood up and offered a hand.
I regret we have not had time to meet before. It would be a privilege to shake your hand.
Yes, sir. She was flustered. When was the last time she was so nervous? Not in combat. Not when Valkyrie was drifting without power and Sims was preparing the self-destruct nukes. This was different. Thank you, sir, she said automatically when he released her hand and indicated she should sit. The compartment he had selected as his office still had the faint scent of copper and dry leather from its previous Jurapta occupants. The chair she sat in, at least, was designed for humans. It had either been brought all the way from Earth or cranked out by the fabricator ships. Either way, a lot of effort and expense had been required so that she wasn't sitting on a hard deck, so she should appreciate it despite the chair being made of what appeared to be hard plastic. The Admiral made small talk for a while, succeeding only in making her more nervous. Surely the commander of Earth's fleet, or what someday would be Earth's fleet, had better demands on his time than to engage a lowly field-grade officer in idle chit-chat about the exploits of the merry band of pirates. Zhao perhaps sensed her uneasiness and cleared his throat.
I will get to the point, Major. The Flying Dutchman needs to conduct a recon at Earth when Valkyrie gets back from their strike at Retonavir, he added with a frown.
The remote and inaccessible location of Fob Jiayuguan, its main strength, was also its main weakness. Ships could not get in or out unless Skippy used his magic keys to open the Elder Wormhole. If something bad happened to Skippy, the Navy would be trapped there until the next wormhole shift opened the area to all sorts of nasty aliens. No one liked the arrangement. No one knew what, if anything, should be done about it. Skippy insisted nothing could be done about it, and no filthy monkey had proven him wrong. Yes, sir. She feared Zhao wanted her to pilot the Dutchman back to Earth. It would be nice to see home again, but flying the Dutchman was no longer a challenge for her, and the refresher training required to requalify would take weeks she didn't have.
If I may suggest a crew for pilot duty, I will leave that up to you, Major.
Sir?
Reed, I want you to take temporary command of the Dutchman. Choose your own pilots.
Sir, she repeated.
But Captain Nakamura is—
Nakamura has relinquished command of the Dutchman to prepare the Ishikari for refit. That did not surprise Reed. Nakamura was Japanese, and the heavy cruiser Ishikari was named for a river in Japan. UNEF Command had established an unofficial tradition that ship captains came from the same nationality as their supposedly non-nationalistic names. It was silly and reduced staffing flexibility and would become unworkable. But UNEF had to soothe national egos on Earth. The executive officer of the Dutchman is inexperienced both in handling that ship in particular and space combat in general. We all lack that experience, he added with a disarming smile. Except for you, of course. Combat? She was alarmed by the suggestion. Sir, the Dutchman is still a space truck. It is optimized for hauling cargo, not...
It is optimized for stealth. Far more than any of the ships of this fleet.
That is true, she agreed.
The Dutchman's jump drive, stealth field generator, the entire engineering section are Maxalt's components that were left over from constructing the Valkyrie. I don't want you to take the ship into combat. I want you to be able to avoid combat.
Yes, sir. The Dutchman is attached to
the Special Mission Group, yes. The skin around Zhao's eyes tightened with irritation. When Colonel Bishop returns, I will request to use the Flying Dutchman. To date, he has not found a use for that ship.
Reed knew that was not true. The Dutchman had been forced to remain at Fav Jia Yuguan because Nagatha had to direct operation of the fleet support ships until their AIs could be brought up to speed. Sammy knew from the daily status report that Nagatha expected the Fabricator AIs would be fully capable of operating independently within the week, and those ships were already busily cranking out parts to refit the second-hand ships of the fleet. It was an honor to be asked to command a starship, and she had many times been the duty officer aboard both the Dutchman and Valkyrie. That was very different from formally taking command, and for a newly promoted major to be assigned as captain of a ship was unheard of. Yet, Bishop had been a sergeant when he took over the Flying Dutchman. Oh, what the hell, she thought. Zhao's offer was phrased politely. He could simply have issued an order for her to take the Dutchman. And he was right, she realized. For a delicate stealth mission, where it was vital the commander understood exactly what the Dutchman was and was not capable of, she was the best candidate.
Yes, sir. When do I start?
Now? The admiral in command of the First Fleet smiled. Now is good.
After taking Valkyrie through the backstop wormhole outbound from Earth, we set course for Ritonavir, despite me having a nagging feeling that we might be pushing our luck by attacking a Maxalt's military base. There wasn't anything specific I could point to that made me nervous, except that my freaking toes were itchy. Or maybe that was all in my stupid head. Damn it, I screwed myself again. I had promised Sims I would listen to my instincts, and instead of pulling out of the Ritonavir op, I kept going. My logic was I shouldn't listen to my instincts when they were just being silly for no reason. I wasn't the only person who had second thoughts about the operation. One fact that made the entire crew uncomfortable was that only one wormhole provided access to Ritonavir unless we wanted to fly Valkyrie through space for 7 weeks. That was not practical. And Skippy was already concerned about the wear and tear on the ship's jump drive. Key components for our battlecruiser could not be replaced by the Fabricator ships at Jaguar, and some of the stuff we got from the Beatles was too old to be functional, or couldn't be made to work with Valkyrie's Maxalt's jump drive. Anyway, going home the long way was not an option I wanted to consider unless we absolutely had to. If we were forced to do that, it meant a substantial force of enemy ships were pursuing us on our retreat from Ritonavir. That meant the kiddies would have plenty of time to send thousands of ships to cut us off during the 7 weeks it would take to reach the backup wormhole. So, only one minor little detail was bothering me. No wonder my toes were itchy. Why were we flying to attack that target if I was uneasy about it? First, my nerves get jiggly before every operation. That's nothing new. Before my first patrol way back in Nigeria, I went behind a bush to puke. It's normal to get keyed up when you're going into harm's way, especially now when I was putting other people in harm's way. We were proceeding to the target for one simple reason. The lack of alternate ingress and egress routes could work in our favor if... those are military terms for ways to get in and ways to get out. The lack of alternate routes, that might complicate our retreat if we encountered substantial resistance, also meant we were quite unlikely to encounter more than a few ships there. The place was at the end of the railroad, so to speak. Nobody went there unless they had a good reason to, and the kiddies had plenty of other, more strategically located heavy shipyards. Result? Few ships ever had a reason to go there. Skippy knew that Ritonavir was considered hardship duty by civilian contractors who took assignments there, and it was a very unpopular posting for their military. The place should be a ghost town when we arrived.
Damn my itchy toes. They were right.
Oh, fudge, Skippy swore. Of all the rotten luck!
What? I demanded.
Valkyrie had jumped in 8 light hours from the heavy shipyard, which orbited the planet named Ritonavir, and we waited for our passive sensors to show us what was there.
Our timing sucks, Joe, he groaned. 3 weeks ago, a group of 14 ships arrived here for refit. They were pulled from the Maxalt's ready reserve and normally would be drifting quietly and empty around some star. But because some numbskull whose name rhymes with Schmo Bitch Slap announced that humans have elder weapons, the kiddies have been gearing up for war.
Shit. That Schmo guy's a jerk. Can't argue with you about that, he muttered.
Jump away, sir. Sims had a finger raised toward the pilots who were waiting for a command.
Not yet, XO. I didn't want to admit that my reason for not jumping away was that my toes suddenly stopped itching.
14 ships, huh? I had one elbow on the command chair's armrest, rubbing my chin with the knuckles of that hand. That move always worked for Jim Kirk. Except he was way cooler than me.
Talk to me, Skippy. What kind of ships?
They're all old, of course, maintained to minimum standards. A star carrier brought them here, and tugs maneuvered most of them into their present positions. Few of them were able to operate under their own power. Now, let's see. 8 are in the shipyard's maintenance docks. The other 6? They are in orbit near the shipyard. One of them is docked at the main civilian space station. That ship has already gone through major refit and is preparing for a shakedown flight. 2 more have also completed major refit and are sorting out their internals. The other 3 are waiting for a repair bay to open at the shipyard.
Details, Skippy. Put it on the main display. What type of ships?
Holy shit, I wish I hadn't asked that question. Of the 8 currently in the shipyard, 6 were battleships, the other 2, heavy cruisers. The battle wagons were big damned things, massing at least 50% more than Valkyrie. The heavy cruisers were almost as big as our ship and had most of a battleship's firepower without the thick armor plating. That was not good news. But, wait, none of the 8 monsters in the shipyard were operational. They had no defenses and no offensive capabilities. They couldn't even launch missiles if their launchers were loaded, which they weren't. The 3 ships waiting their turn in the shipyard were dead, running on reserve power. They also couldn't hurt us. That left 3 ships that had completed refit. Bullshit. Those ships had gone through the major elements of getting them returned to operation. They were not fully combat ready, not even flight worthy. A whole lot of work remained to be done inside them to make them dangerous as warships.
Huh. I rubbed my chin again without being conscious about it. Maybe I was channeling my inner Kirk. 14 ships, none of them capable of shooting at us.
See? I raised an eyebrow at Sims.
Skippy. She didn't reply directly to me. What other defenses are in system?
Hoo boy, he sighed. Plenty. The planet has an extensive strategic defense network.
Sims cocked her head at me in what I interpreted as an I told you so gesture.
Well, Skippy continued, I guess it's more accurate to say it used to have an extensive SD network. Now I suspect a lot of the satellites are for show, not operational. Unless they posed a navigation hazard, they were left in place, but maintenance was cut back severely. Let me check. Yes, 84% of the SD network is offline or ineffective. Resisting the temptation to say something snarky to Sims was not easy. It was silly, unproductive, and unprofessional to have a rivalry with my executive officer. I also knew that our relationship worked very well, so I wasn't going to change anything.
Will the SD network be able to prevent us gaining access to the shipyard?
No.
Outstanding. Then we...
You didn't let me finish! His avatar put hands on his hips. The shipyard has plenty of powerful defenses, and those are in excellent condition. directed energy and particle cannons, missile launchers, and rail guns, plus heavy energy shields, thick armor plating around sensitive areas, a damping field generator, a distortion field that prevents ships from jumping inside the designated approach zone, the whole shebang.
Shebang? Sometimes I wondered where Skippy got his slang.
Shit, this is impossible.
Maybe. Skippy stuck his lower lip out like he was lost in thought. I discovered something interesting. One of those heavy cruisers was in better condition than expected and has been judged to be done with the first phase of its refit. It will be moving out of the shipyard. Actually, it should already be in the process of moving out since we're seeing events on an 8-hour time lag out here.
This is a good thing? The last thing we want is an operational heavy cruiser creating complications for us.
It's not fully combat ready, but its weapon systems are coming online.
So this is even more impossible than we thought.
No, I didn't say that, Joe. Skippy smirked.
This is kind of an odd role reversal, but I have an idea to get us in there.
You do? Crap, dreaming up crazy ideas was my job. If Skippy could do that himself, he didn't need me.
Give me a hint. Why didn't I think of whatever this idea is?
Because you forgot to do something.
What did I forget?
To trust the awesomeness.
Okay, get ready, Skippy urged the bridge crew.
We've been ready for 30 minutes, I said, with all the patience I had right then.
Well, he looked flustered. There was a lot of pressure on him.
It's just this requires precise timing.
We know that. I need at least 4.2 seconds once we're in there.
You might have mentioned that once or twice. I cleared my throat.
4.2 seconds exactly. Technically 4.18379. We get the idea. 4.2. Leave the rest as a safety margin.
Once we're in there, I will be busy, you understand?
We do.
Bilby will have to get us out of here all by himself.
I got this, dude,
the ship's AI drawled.
You've never done something like this, Skippy protested.
I was born for this, Bilby insisted.
You weren't. You, like, trained me. You created me. I'm kind of like your son, you know?
Don't worry, Dudo El Supremo. I won't let you down.
Skippy choked up, and his avatar froze for a moment.
Oh, he waved a hand. I'm not worried about you, Bilby. My concern is that while the two of us are busy doing all the work, the monkeys will distract us with their inane blah 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 about stupid monkey things.
We will zip our lips, Skippy, I assured him. Really, there wouldn't be time to say much of anything. The operation either worked as planned or not at all.
I'm serious. There is no room for improvisation or hesitation, he warned. We follow the plan, understand? No monkey antics.
Got it. We follow your plan, Skippy. It's a good plan.
Hm, he sniffed. We'll see about that.
Or, you know, Bilby added helpfully, we'll all be dead and never know.
Well, that was helpful. Wait, Skippy whispered. This is it. Hold my beer in 3, 2, 1. Now.
The shipyard had formidable defenses, because it had to supply nearly full power to multiple warships, sometimes simultaneously. Its reactors were some of the most powerful units the Maxalks had ever put in space. The designers of those reactors did not have to be concerned about making them compact and lightweight for shipboard use, so they were massive, each of them capable of much higher output than even the modified units that propelled Valkyrie. The shipyard's reactors could power immensely strong energy shields and a spatial distortion field that would prevent Valkyrie from jumping in close enough to do harm. Any ship approaching the shipyard had to drop out a jump, then fly through space under the guns of the shipyard and whatever SD satellites were still operational. It was a suicide mission. The kiddies and AIs who designed the shipyard's defenses had done their best to make it capable of withstanding an attack by the Rindaloo. They had not counted on being attacked by a ship full of monkeys and a snarky beer can. The heavy cruiser, which was already powering up its weapons for testing, was being backed away from the shipyard. Automated tugs guided it for safety, lest some accident or screw-up cause the massive ship to crash into something important. Everything about our attack plan,
depended on math. I hate math. Math determined the timing. The heavy cruiser had been serviced in one of the shipyard's 8 bays, and the massive clamshell doors of that bay had retracted to give the cruiser and its attendant tugs room to maneuver. The cruiser had backed out of the bay and was moving away at a slow, steady speed. The shipyard's energy shields in that area had been reduced in power and returned to let the cruiser and tugs slip through. If you think the weakened energy shield helped us, I am sad to say it did not. We still had the problem of the distortion field that prevented us from jumping in near the shipyard, and by the time we jumped in, reset our targeting sensors, and fired weapons, the shipyard would have reacted by restoring its shield strength. No. What we cared about was the wake of disturbed spatial distortion field that the heavy cruiser and its tugs were leaving behind them. In their wake, space-time was distorted just a little bit less than elsewhere. Our timing had to be precise. We were waiting for the moment when the cruiser reached the somewhat fuzzy edge of the field. Math also determined where we had to be and at what speed and direction we were moving. Valkyrie had to constantly move sideways to remain motionless relative to the shipyard. That massive orbital platform was not rotating because it had artificial gravity, but it was in orbit. It was moving around the planet and not going in a straight line. Its path was curved to follow the planet's gravity well. That path was ever so slightly altered by the mass of the heavy cruiser moving away, as its own gravity well was gently affecting the shipyard. Once the cruiser was at a safe distance, the shipyard would very gradually adjust itself back on the path of its original orbit, and if it began moving before we were ready, our whole plan would be ruined. So, we couldn't jump in close enough to strike before the shipyard's defenses would be ready, and we couldn't win a one-on-one battle against that orbiting fortress. It was hopeless. It was impossible. There was just no way to make the physics work in our favor. Fortunately, physics is Skippy's bitch. When the heavy cruiser neared the outer edge of the distortion field, the only wild card that might screw up our plan was if that ship maneuvered unexpectedly. That should not happen. It was following procedure by coasting away from the shipyard without using its engines. The tugs attached to the cruiser's hull also had their engines shut down. That didn't mean nothing could screw up our plan. The cruiser might have to maneuver out of the way if a large space rock just happened to be headed toward it right then. Sure, that is unlikely, especially since the Maxalt's SD network should have located and blasted any hazardous space junk long before it got close enough to be a hazard, but it was possible. If the universe wanted to screw with Joe Bishop, this was a golden opportunity. Well, technically, it was Skippy's plan, so the universe would be bitterly disappointed if it wanted to give me a smackdown. The cruiser reached the point where the strength of the field was weak enough to be ineffective, and Valkyrie jumped on Skippy's signal. Wait, didn't I say several times that we could not jump in close enough to make the attack a success? Yes, Valkyrie's jump drive couldn't get close enough. The beer can knew of a way to cheat. If you didn't know this already, Skippy loves cheating. Skippy thought of a way to attack the shipyard because he knew a fun fact about how different types of energy fields interacted. I did not know that fun fact because I am an ignorant monkey. The heavy cruiser and the 9 robotic tugs attached to it all had their defensive energy shields active, but operating at a low level and tuned specifically so those shields did not interfere with the distortion field around the shipyard. That tuning allowed the distortion field to maintain its normal strength as the cruiser passed through it. Except, there was one small area where the distortion field was disrupted by the cruiser's shields, 9 areas, actually, where the energy shields of each tug overlapped the shields of the cruiser. They were not perfectly in sync. That weakened the field in those local areas. Not enough for Valkyrie to jump through, except when the cruiser was near the outer edge of the distortion field where it was already weak. Skippy was able to adjust our jump drive so it projected the far end right through one of those gaps, all the way along the wake left by the cruiser, right to the shipyard. It would have been impossible without him. Even Bilby could not think fast enough to anticipate changes in the distortion field and retune our drive in real time. Remind me in the future when I think something is impossible to trust the awesomeness. Valkyrie emerged from our jump wormhole smack in the center of the shipyard bay that had just been vacated by the heavy cruiser.
Our battlecruiser was nearly motionless relative to that enormous servicing bay that could accommodate a battleship easily 3 times the size of our ship. We only needed a few thrusters firing to correct the tiny error inevitable in any jump. Here's the thing. The designers of the shipyard never anticipated they would need to fire on one of their own ships inside a maintenance bay. Therefore, all the impressive firepower of the shipyard was useless. They were all pointed away from the massive orbiting station. The crew, or actually the shipyard's AI, could have launched missiles to curve around toward Valkyrie. Except that those missiles all had very sensible range safety devices installed, specifically to prevent some idiot jackass from using those weapons on their home base. Range safety devices could be overridden, though that would take time the shipyard did not have. Skippy needed 4.2 seconds, minimum. Though we were in the very heart of enemy territory, they couldn't actually shoot at us with anything more powerful than rifles. "Hi," I waved at the main display. "We're here for the free oil change." The shipyard's master AI was pleased to see so much activity after so many years of loneliness. First, it had the honor of modifying fuel extraction platforms for a glorious attack against the upstart humans. Now it was getting warships ready to defend the homeland. Its only regret was that the heavy cruiser that recently departed was in such good condition when pulled from the ready reserve, it did not need much work to be flightworthy. Another ship would be coming into the empty maintenance bay, and the bay was not empty. A battlecruiser was there. How? The AI blew a fuse. Its sensors must be wrong. There could not be a battlecruiser in... Oh, crap. It was that battlecruiser. A message was transmitted by the ghost ship. A human was babbling nonsense about the ship needing... fluids replaced? Doing the only thing it could do, attempting to launch the shipyard's missiles, the AI was politely but firmly reminded by the lowly fire control AI that range safety devices did not allow missiles to strike their own station. The fire control AI might even have added a "you dumbass" to its reply. The master AI realized at that moment it was master of exactly nothing. What the f- This could not be happening! "Weapons away," Sims whispered, her announcement confirmed by the deck shuddering slightly and streaks on the display representing our missiles launching. "Oh," I feigned embarrassment, blinking at the display. "Were we supposed to call for an appointment?" "I'm done," Skippy said with a hoarse voice. I grasped the armrests of my chair. "Shepard, punch it." We jumped away, guided by Bilby. It was not the best jump we've ever done. It was also not the worst. Not even in the bottom 10, if you're keeping score. Nobody on the bridge ralphed, and my eyes were blurry and seeing double for only a few seconds. I count that as a win. Okay, so it was rude of us to jump in and jump away so quickly without even staying for lunch. We did leave several nice gifts for our short-term hosts, if you consider nuclear warheads to be a nice gift. When Sims confirmed our weapons had launched, she meant the 6 megaton scale warheads we had stuffed into the heavily armored nose cones of missiles. The missiles slammed out of their launch tubes, then quickly cut thrust. We didn't want them traveling so fast that they punched clean through the shipyard and out into space. Here's the thing about using nukes in space combat. They aren't usually very effective. In a vacuum, a nuclear detonation doesn't have anything to push against, so the effect is limited. But when 6 nukes explode inside an orbiting shipyard, the several million tons of structure turns the place into shrapnel, and that was very effective. "Well, Bilby," I prompted our ship's surfer slacker AI. "BDA?" "Oh, dude, do you mean the rap group BDA? Because they're righteously rad and battle, damage, assessment, please." "Oh," he snorted. "Right, sorry. Wow. Scratch 1 shipyard. Also scratch 6 battleships and a heavy cruiser that were in the shipyard when it blew up. Also, that heavy cruiser that left just before we arrived got smacked by a piece of the shipyard. It's never gonna fly again, you know? I feel just awful about that. Any sign of pursuit?" No, but we're 17 light seconds from the planet. If any ship from there is trying to follow us, we wouldn't see it jump away until the photons reach us.
The ships I can see now are... Right. What's going on with Skippy?
Well, he's, like, super busy.
Okay. Is the ship ready to jump again?
It won't be a perfect jump, but, like...
Yeah. Shepard, get us out of here.
Chapter 6.
Oh, that is interesting, Skippy mumbled, partly to himself. It was the first time he had spoken since we jumped away from the shipyard.
What?
I was kind of busy guiding Valkyrie's escape. Is it important?
It is not of immediate use, but you will want to hear about this.
Great. You can tell us after this next jump. The clock on the display showed we were under 2 minutes from our third jump after leaving the shipyard in ruins behind us. Three jumps were probably enough to shake off any pursuit, though there were no signs that the Ratanavir system had any ships left that were capable of posing a threat to our mighty battlecruiser. The only issue that concerned me was that there was only one functioning wormhole in the area, so any bad guys chasing us knew we had to go there.
Okie dokie. You want me to put the info into a slick PowerPoint presentation?
I'm a soldier, Skippy. I never want to see another PowerPoint slide again.
We jumped without incident, and the capacitors began recharging. One long-distance jump would take us to the wormhole, and we had enough charge left for that, but it would leave the jump drive drained. If there was any risk of us encountering enemy ships on either side of that wormhole, I wanted a full charge on the capacitors before we approached. Leaving the ship in the capable hands of Jennifer Sims, I went to my office and leaned the chair way back. I was exhausted from the tension of the shipyard attack.
Hey.
I put a hand over my mouth to stifle a yawn.
Before I forget, you should thank Bilby. He did a fantastic job today.
I guess he did okay, Skippy said grudgingly. Why don't you thank him?
Because it would mean more to him if you said you're proud of him.
Me? Why?
Because, and I can't believe I have to explain this to a super smart AI, he looks up to you.
Oh, well, Skippy was flustered. Of course he does. I am kind of awesome, you know, so
I'm trying to be real here for a moment, you ass.
Sorry.
You really think it would be a big deal for me to say he did good today?
I think it would be a huge deal for him.
I'll try it.
Great.
Another yawn I couldn't stop. Just then, a bot rolled into my office carrying a hot cup of coffee.
Thanks, Skippy. That was nice of you.
I took a sip of the coffee.
I want you fully awake for this discussion, he hinted.
Oh, shit. Setting the cup on my desk, I prepared for bad news. The attack on the shipyard was retaliation for the cloud that threatened to freeze Earth, and it was a satisfying screw-you gesture to the rotten kiddies. News of the attack would hopefully bring at least a momentary morale boost to the frightened people of Earth, would lessen the pressure on Admiral Zhao to do something, and would let the Max Ulks public know that humanity was not going to meekly accept our fate. But that is not why we conducted the attack on the shipyard. Oh, the reasons I cited are all good. They just weren't important enough to risk our battlecruiser. Despite all of Angry Joe's tough guy talk, I was not going to do something stupid just for the sake of doing something. What had kept Skippy busy for 4.2 seconds and forced Bilby to take over operation of the ship is the real reason we hit the shipyard. While I was cracking jokes and the crew was launching nukes, Skippy was having his way with the local database, including, and most importantly, the top secret files stored there. When Valkyrie was ambushed by over 1,000 Max Ulks warships and we got trapped deep in the atmosphere of the ice giant planet we called Snowcone, Skippy had hacked into the computers of the fleet upstairs. The malware he uploaded had a singular, limited purpose and was not able to ransack the data files of the infected ships. All he got were a handful of fragmented, tantalizing hints of some deliciously top-secret data in the files of the command ships, and we needed to know more. We thought that the shipyard, being a large, secure facility, would have access to data on current top-secret operations, even if the shipyard's AI was only told what it needed to know. If we had access to that type of info while the shipyard was modifying fuel extraction platforms for the operation at Jupiter, we might have been able to prevent the cloud from being created. Of course, Skippy's smash-and-grab raid of data from the shipyard would have been noticed by the master AI there if it had time to check its archives.
Sadly, that AI was now a mixture of high-energy particles and radioactive scrap, so we didn't have to worry about it telling anyone what we had done.
Hit me with it, Skippy. What nasty thing are the kiddies planning now?
That I don't know, Joe. If they are planning to hit Earth again, the shipyard was not informed.
I was confused.
Okay, then what do you know?
Two things, both of them very interesting. One of them potentially very, like, super useful to us.
Oh, I thought you were going to ruin my day.
Not this time. Unless you would like to hear selections from my latest opera.
I would not like.
I thought so.
Okay, behind door number one is a sleazy plan by the kitties to activate their elder weapons and trigger sentinels to wipe out all life in the galaxy.
What?
Holy shit, what the Whoa. Maybe I should have added that this is only a contingency plan.
You think?
My bad. Sorry.
While I tried to stop my pounding heart from bursting out of my chest, he explained that under the direction of my least favorite kitty, Admiral Reichert, the Maxulks were building a doomsday fleet, enormous transport ships that would be filled with hibernating passengers to be flown beyond the edge of the galaxy and wait there until the rampaging sentinels had gone back to their long sleep. The plan, which made me sick to hear it, was for the kitties on those ships to then repopulate the galaxy as the only intelligent species. Skippy said the ships would have samples of plants and animals from the Maxulk's homeworld so they could recreate their preferred biosphere.
What a bunch of assholes.
The plan was only a contingency in case the worst happened. Unfortunately, the Maxulk's leadership had a very different, sick and twisted definition of worst case than we did. Their worst case was not that they would be facing extinction, and so might as well trigger their elder weapons. No, their worst case was that they would no longer rule over an empire of unwilling clients. Their worst case was that they could no longer rule half of the galaxy with an iron fist. Basically, those narcissistic pieces of shit felt that if they couldn't be special, life was not worth living. No, that's not true. Other people's lives were not worth living, including the lives of their own citizens. The elite leadership of the Maxulks and their families would go into a long hibernation to emerge as unquestioned masters of all they surveyed.
Oh, fuck that, I gasped.
Wait, why did the shipyard have...
Oh, exactly. That shipyard will be... Well, he chuckled. It was supposed to be creating components for the hibernation ships. This is an extremely sensitive operation. The Maxulks need to spread out the manufacturing across their industrial base so their general public doesn't realize a major project is going on behind their backs. Parts for those ships will be collected and brought to the site where the ships are being assembled.
You know where that is?
Yes. It's in a red dwarf star system, along a heavily traveled route between two important wormholes. The kitties are being very clever, he conceded. No one will notice the additional traffic, and because there is already a fueling station at another star system along that route, there is no reason for ships to go to the Red Dwarf.
The hibernation ships are being assembled now?
Yes.
We need to stop that.
Are you sure, Joe? Any action we take that brings the Maxulks closer to what they perceive as defeat and humiliation will make them more likely to trigger their weapons.
Shit. Yes. I need to think about this.
Good idea. While you're thinking about that, I have news that can only be good.
I squinted at him.
Are you screwing with me?
No, I don't think so. Although what I think is good news could be diff...
What is it?
First, I need to provide a bit of background.
Suppressing a groan, because I knew it was best to let Skippy ramble on or he would pout and be miserable, I leaned back in my chair.
Please do, I sighed.
Okay, well, the Maxulks have, not just them, mind you, many species have...
If this is going to be a really long explanation, I should get a snack.
Oh, shut up and drink your coffee. As I was saying, most species have remote facilities for servicing and resupply of warships. Ships operating far from their regular bases or unable to access those bases can get fuel, missiles, spare parts, even typical minor repairs completed at one of these remote servicing stations.
Yeah, I know. I said with a shudder. On my orders, we had gone to a Maxulk servicing station to get power boosters for Valkyrie. That simple operation became Armageddon for us. I wasn't eager to think about it.
Oh, yes. He hesitated.
I didn't mean to bring up bad memories. It's okay. We need to remember. What about those stations?
I discovered that the Maxalts used to have secret major servicing stations they called safe harbors scattered throughout their territory. Only their senior military leaders knew the locations of the harbors. They were built so the Maxalts fleet could continue to fight if the Rindaloo conducted a massive surprise attack. There was a change of strategy about 800 years ago when it was discovered the Spiders actually knew about many of the supposedly safe harbors and had them on their primary target list. The kiddies, felt pretty stupid. I feel terrible for them. I suspect you are lying about that. Anywho, most of the safe harbors were stripped and taken out of service. However, there is one that was never decommissioned. Its designation is Semi-Automated Servicing Station 17. A wormhole shift 900 years ago made that one servicing station inaccessible so the kiddies couldn't get there anymore. As far as they know, it is still there, waiting for ships that will never come. 1,000-year-old station? I'm impressed you dug up all this info, but why do we care? Missiles, Joe. And spare parts, still in their original boxes. Safe harbors were crammed full of useful stuff like that. Will those missiles still be effective? I asked, skeptical. Yes. Well, I should have said missile parts, sort of an assemble-it-yourself kit. The limited life components, like the propulsion modules, will have expired by now. It would be dangerous to use them. Okay, so we can get a bunch of spare parts? Getting kits to build only part of a missile did not sound particularly useful, but we could always use advanced technology stuff for Skippy to work with. Also, he was clearly excited about the safe harbor, and I needed to at least pretend to be interested.
Better than that, Joe, he teased.
Don't keep me in suspense, Skippy. I tipped the cup back and swallowed the rest of the coffee.
Wait for it. Wait for it.
Here's the deal. Safe harbors are not just warehouses and fuel tanks. They are semi-automated ship servicing platforms. Joe, they have fabricators. Not like the second-hand units we got from the Giraffa. The Maxalts knew that many ships coming to a safe harbor would have battle damage, some severe. Providing spare parts would not be enough to restore a ship's combat readiness. They need the ability to manufacture replacements for whatever a damaged ship needs. Some items, like atomic compression warheads, jump drive coils, things like that, are still beyond the ability of a Maxalt's fabricator engine to crank out. But having access to a safe harbor station would be a major advantage to us.
I see that. My need for coffee was forgotten. The Maxalts have been cut off from this place for 900 years. You haven't told me whether we can get there or not. Joe, please.